struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, thanks for tuning into the show. But before we get started, I wanted to give you all the opportunity to hop in our group at facebook.com/group/nonprofitarchitect. We're running a contest right now for your chance to win a $200 donation. We're not just building stronger nonprofits by giving you the actionable steps to do what you do better, but we're also putting our money where our mouth is. And if you sign up for the contest, and the rules are in the group, that you will get the chance to win a $200 donation and have a direct, real-world, real-time impact to your mission. If you're struggling with fundraising, if you're unsure of how to handle a board, if you're not sure where to go and what your next steps are because you have this endless list of things to do, you can also sign up for the Nonprofit Architect Alliance Mastermind Group. Real easy, real low barrier of entry at $50 a month to get in with other leaders like yourself that find themselves stuck. Help let other people in the group solve your problems. If you're doing this thing as a solo shop or without a lot of support from your board, it's hard to know who to go talk to. It's hard to know what to do next. And if you're doing this alone, chances are you're not going to get very far. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go as a group. So also in the group, sign up for the Nonprofit Architect Alliance Mastermind Group and let the experts help build your stronger nonprofit each and every month. Now let's go to the interview. Hey, welcome to the show. I'm sitting here with Stephen Aguiar from Good Goes Further. How are you doing today, Stephen?
I'm good, Travis. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for being on the show. We got connected with a podcasting agent, but before we hop in the show today, if you haven't yet signed up for the Nonprofit Architect Mastermind, send me an email to nonprofitarchitect@gmail.com. Get signed up for that. It's only $50 a month. Get around other like-minded leaders and help grow your nonprofit. Stephen, why don't you tell me what you do with Good Goes Further?
Sure. So I've been a digital marketing consultant for the last 4 years with a separate brand actually called Blue Wing, which is sort of my agency, where I've worked with a bunch of nonprofits over the last 4 years, probably about 10 to a dozen, and a bunch of other businesses. And I think going into COVID, I really felt like I wanted to use more of my digital marketing skill set for good, and wanted to focus more on the nonprofit space. You know, what I was seeing was a lot of nonprofits doing well, especially ones related to like criminal justice reform or racial injustice or healthcare. And meanwhile, there's a lot of nonprofits out there that are struggling. They're losing recurring donors because of high unemployment. There's a lot of grant opportunities drying up. And so really with Good Goes Further, I want to create a community, probably similar to your mastermind. But really, it's sort of working on three different levels. Number one, we have a free private Facebook group with about 60 people in it already. That's moderated by myself, where I just sort of post digital marketing resources and thoughts on what's going on in the space. Number two, we have our own interview series called The Playbook. We published about 15 interviews. You can find them on social media and our website. We basically ask nonprofit marketers one question, and then that's what's one growth tactic that's worked really well for your organization. And so far, we've asked that question 15 times and gotten 15 different answers. So a lot of great inspiration on that front. And then lastly, not completely altruistic, but we have a monetization component, and we do nonprofit digital marketing workshops. So we're wrapping up our fourth one that we've done in the last couple months. And basically we come in as sort of a digital SWAT team and look at every single opportunity that there might be for your nonprofit in terms of digital marketing. You know, think organic search, paid social, email marketing, CRM, fundraising tools, staffing, whatever it is. We sort of look under every rock and figure out, you know, what is a sustainable path forward for your digital marketing strategy. So that's Good Goes Further. That's sort of how we're set up and different things that we offer, some free, some paid. But really at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is just sort of preach the gospel, if you will, of digital marketing and growth marketing within the space.
See, most of my listeners are in the startup space. It's kind of like idea for a nonprofit through about 5 years of operation. And like the biggest struggle they have is, is getting the word out, right? People, if people don't know you exist, they can't find you. And if they can't find you, they of course can't donate to your cause or support you in any fashion. So what would you say to the new guy on the block? How would you help them get something fired up like the Google Ad Grant so they can get a marketing budget?
Yeah, so Google Ad Grants is a great example. It's a resource by Google that where essentially they offer nonprofits $10,000 a month in free digital advertising. It sounds really great on paper, and it is, but I will, you know, sort of caveat that there's a lot of strings attached. So, you know, for example, with Google Ad Grants, there's a limit on, you know, as far as clicks where you can't spend more than $2 per click. Right. So if you think about Google ads in general, there's some really competitive keywords out there where it might cost you, like, say, for example, for an insurance vertical, $60-$70 just to get a click to your website, right? Because it's super expensive, super competitive, and there's a lot of big players. So with Google Ad Grants, it's great to get some baseline exposure and get some traffic to your website. But, you know, depending on how competitive your nonprofit niche is, it might be hard to spend that $10K. To sort of answer your question about getting started, I think there's a couple of things that I think about. Number one, there's usually a trade-off when it comes to, I guess, anything in life. And that's everything either costs money or time, right? So if you have time, you can invest your time in doing things like writing blog posts, and which will help improve the SEO visibility of your site and bring in free traffic that way. If you have money but no time, then you can spend more aggressively on Google ads or Facebook ads or Instagram ads to really get your word out there more quickly without having to invest so much time. So really, you know, when you think about that spectrum between money and time, you can sort of almost place all the digital marketing tactics along that spectrum. And just, you know, and that being said, you know, even with a little bit of budget, you know, some investment in Facebook, in particular advertising, can go really far. I'll just mention, you know, going into COVID, the average global CPM for Facebook ads was around $3. So it costs $3 to get 1,000 impressions of your ad. And that sunk all the way down to $1 when COVID was sort of at its peak, because a lot of advertisers were pulling budget. And at the same time, a lot of people were spending a lot more time on social media. So there was a decrease in demand, an increase in supply. And if you've ever taken an economics course, that means things get cheaper, right? So, and it's still sort of the case. I think for a lot of my, you know, a lot of my clients, I'm still seeing CPMs in the $1 to $2 range. So even if, you know, with that in mind, you know, even $100 a month for Facebook and Instagram ads will get you 100,000 impressions of your brand in the feed. And when you compare that to what you get starting up, or, you know, organic Facebook page and just posting organically, where you might get a few hundred impressions, it really moves the needle for a little bit amount of money. So yeah, you know, think about the different tactics that are out there. Maybe we can dive into a few. Think about whether you have time or money to invest, and then sort of work from there on what you should be focusing on when you're starting up.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned blog posting. We're recording this episode on 23rd of September, my 1 year anniversary of the podcast, which is fantastic.
Awesome. I'm honored.
Yeah, you got the magic day here. Yesterday on the 22nd, we released an interview with Stephen Kuhn, where he talks about how to add blogging to your website to really pull people in. And what he suggests is that you don't have to do all your own blogs. You can bring in bloggers that talk about your topic that are already doing so, and you can post them on your website, on your social media. You don't have to create all of your own content. You have whatever that you're passionate about. Say, I'm still active duty Navy, so I get a lot of veterans that I talk to. You care about veterans and PTSD and things of that nature. There is thousands of bloggers out there that talk about just that, and you can work with them to bring their content onto your site. So when people come to your site, they have a reason to keep coming back. Most websites right now are just a digital pamphlet, and that doesn't really inspire people to come back more than once, unless you're doing something like blogging and putting content on your page.
And yeah, blogging is great for a few reasons. I really agree with the other Steve that hiring bloggers is a great idea. Again, it's time or money, right? So if you don't have the budget, you got to do it yourself. But if you have the budget, I think outsourcing it is a great idea. But yeah, Google really likes long, authoritative text content. And they also really like when websites are updated regularly. So having a blog is a way to sort of do all of that. you're publishing, and to your point, you know, bringing in a guest writer, Google also, like, it's not a huge ranking factor, but they are keeping tabs on, you know, who are authoritative writers, right? So, like, if I was to go start blogging about the Army or the Navy, they're going to be like, you don't know anything about it. But if you got, you know, a 5-star general to be doing it, now Google's like, oh, well, this is, like, authoritative, right? So, like, they are looking at that byline. So, to your point, like, bringing in a guest writer to talk about their niche is a great idea. But really where I'm going with this is, like, you know, publishing long-form content regularly on your website is going to look really good in Google's eyes. And really, once you get into a flow, you know, it's sort of like rising tide lifts all boats. As you continue blogging, those original blog posts that you published before will get more visibility too, because you're just consistently improving the authority of your website. So even stuff you've published in the past will continue to increase in ranking over time. And I've never spoken, I know personally from doing blogging for Blue Wing and Good Goes Further and helping clients out with blogging consulting, you never regret publishing more blog posts. You know, 6 months from now, a year from now, when you're getting a bunch of inbound traffic of people searching for things related to your niche passively for free, you're really going to pat yourself on the back for investing all that time and effort and doing it up front. And it's really worth it.
I definitely agree. So we've got, you know, startup nonprofit, and they're like, well, I could definitely write a blog post, but I might be able to throw a couple bucks into Facebook or Instagram ads. I mean, how do you structure an ad to you know, drive traffic to your website or your Facebook page?
Yeah, so there's three core buckets that I use to sort of segment the ads and sort of like what their purpose is and who they're reaching. And they all sort of link together. And really, depending on where you are in sort of startup phase and depending on the size of your audience, you should probably, you know, focus on one or more compared to the others. Let's think about it as a funnel. Let's start top of funnel. Let's start with brand awareness. Say you're a brand new nonprofit, you're starting up and you really just want to get your brand out there to get people to recognize who you are. You can set up a brand awareness or a reach campaign on Facebook that will get you the maximum reach for the least amount of budget. And so that's really what I was talking about earlier, the $1, $2 CPMs. And that works really well with video. You know, video views you can get for a cent and sometimes even less each on Facebook. And so with those, really, you just want to reach the maximum amount of people, get your brand out there, get your story out there, which is why video is also really powerful, and start just getting that initial awareness. Next is my next bucket, and maybe one of my favorites is lead generation ads. So lead generation ads is an ad format on Facebook and Instagram where it gives you the ability to capture someone's contact information. So the ad runs in their Facebook or Instagram feed, but when they click on it, it actually doesn't even go to your website. It just opens up right into a form right in their feed, and it has their first name, last name, and whatever other information you want to capture, zip code, phone number, things like that, already filled out in the form because Facebook already knows that data. And so all they have to do is hit submit, and that contact information is then synced to your email list, to your CRM, say MailChimp or HubSpot or whatever it is. And so those are really good, you know, for hitting sort of a warmer audience, people that are more familiar with you and that might be more willing to sign up to your email list. And the last one, of course, is fundraising. And so these are sort of like, you know, direct fundraising ads where, you know, you're targeting an audience. And ideally, this is a large, warm audience. You can't just go out to people that have never heard of you and ask them for money. You try, but you're not going to be very successful. So you want to retarget people that have visited your website, retarget people on your email list, retarget people that watch that video that I was talking about earlier, the brand awareness one. And, you know, you can put basically an ask them in front of them to donate to your nonprofit or become a recurring donor or whatever it is. And so those are sort of the three primary sort of levels that I think about, you know, brand awareness campaigns, lead generation or email acquisition campaigns, and then lastly, fundraising. And they're all connected, right? So like you can have someone that watches your brand awareness campaign video, and then you can retarget them if they watch 75% or more with an email ad, and then you get their email. And then once you have someone's email, you have them in a custom audience of your email list, and you target them with the fundraising ad. And if you have all those three things running at once, now all of a sudden you have a clearly defined journey with your advertising strategy that gets them from A to B.
So you mentioned retargeting in there. How would you know how to retarget them? We're speaking to startup nonprofits here. what do you have to have on your, in your Facebook or on your website to help track these people?
When you're setting up your ad account, one of the first things you want to do is set up your Facebook pixel. The Facebook pixel, you know, like you mentioned with retargeting, if anyone's ever gone to a e-commerce website or anything like that, you leave the feed, you leave the website, you go back to the feed, and all of a sudden that ad or that pair of shoes you were just looking at is following you around the internet, right? So that's retargeting. And basically all you need to do is install the Facebook pixel, which is a small snippet of code that's invisible to users that are visiting your website. If you're on a CMS like WordPress or Drupal or Squarespace, it's really easy to install. They typically have like plugins and stuff like that that you can install the pixel without knowing how to code at all. And essentially, when someone visits your website, the pixel fires, and it then matches that website visitor with their Facebook profile. And so when you go into your ad account, you do something called create custom audiences. And so a custom audience is essentially a group of people on Facebook that have interacted with your brand in some way. There's a bunch of different types of custom audiences you can create. And one of those, obviously, is website visitors. So now that you have the Facebook pixel on your website, you can go into Facebook ad account, go into Ads Manager, create a custom audience of people that have visited your website in the last 2 weeks, last 30 days, last 90 days. You can say people that have visited certain pages, exclude people that have visited certain pages. You know, you can sort of go down the rabbit hole as far as custom audience creation, but to answer your question succinctly, you know, definitely set up that Facebook pixel ASAP once you create your ad account.
No, I'm sure this is something you offer at Good Goes Further, but you know, there is a ton of how-to videos out there of how to find your and activate your Facebook pixel, where the code is, and how to put that into your website. So folks listening, it is not as hard as it might sound, especially if this is the first time you've heard about Facebook pixel. Really, it's pretty straightforward. So that's really cool. But how do you, so you talk about Facebook ads, but then you also talk about Instagram ads. Is it different? I know they're owned by the same company.
They are owned by the same company, and they both operate out of the same ads manager. So essentially use the same exact platform to run Facebook or Instagram ads. And when you're setting up your campaigns, generally you can run them on both at the same time, no problem. And so obviously, you know, keep in mind that depending on the format of the ad, you know, it will look different on Facebook versus Instagram. So for example, you know, a lot of ads on Facebook have a headline under the image. A lot of ads on Instagram don't. And Facebook, you know, if you set it up just out the box, you know, you'll run and you run the same ad on both, you know, the one on Instagram without the headline might not look great. But basically you can set it up where like within at the ad set level where you can basically say, okay, I want to run a campaign just on Facebook and just select Facebook and then create maybe some different, slightly modified ad creative and just run that on Instagram. And then you might even want to have some separate ad creative just to run on stories, right? Because stories is a whole different format compared to what people see on Facebook or in Instagram and feed. So to answer your question, it's all under one ads manager. You can basically run the same ad creative on all of them at the same time. But especially once you start sort of getting more advanced, like you might want to segment your ad sets based on what platform they're running on so that the ads look as good as possible.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much technology out there, like when you're building a website to see how it looks on desktop or tablet versus mobile and making sure that all those things align. So imagine it's good to do a couple of test runs on a smaller budget to see what it might look like.
Totally. Yeah, within the ads, when you're building the ad, there will be a preview and Facebook will even offer you you can basically click on this button that basically clicks out to a preview in the feed. So you can open up your own Facebook or Instagram profile and scroll down and you'll see your ad based on what it would look like to users when you set it live. So there's some great preview functions within Ads Manager that I highly recommend checking out.
That's really cool. You had mentioned a little CRM beforehand. And did I read that correctly? Are you like a HubSpot guy?
Yeah, we're a HubSpot partner. So we're a little biased and obviously think they're a great CRM and marketing automation solution. That being said, you know, we've worked with a bunch of other CRMs, whether it's Salesforce or Pipedrive or Virtuous or Fundraise or something. You know, there's a lot of nonprofit specific ones out there as well. But yeah, essentially, the CRM, especially if you're starting up, it's a great, it's essentially your database, right, of all your donors, whether they're, high net worth individual givers or sort of like your grassroots donations. You want to have all that data syncing into your CRM so that you can pull the right reports. And you can also segment your audience based on the different types of communications you want to send out. So for example, with the help of a CRM that's integrated with your email marketing platform, maybe when you do a fundraising ask on a Wednesday, an email, you don't want to send it to people that donated to you on Monday or Tuesday, right? Because they just gave to you. Maybe we just exclude them and not bother them, and they'll probably mark it as spam or be like, why are you emailing me again? I just gave to you yesterday. So with things like that, the ability to then segment your donors based on their interactions, their previous history, especially when it comes to email marketing communications, is really important. And that's how I think a CRM can be really helpful.
That's good. I like that. But I mean, this is all kind of, it's not varsity, but it's definitely JV stuff. You can't do any of this stuff unless you really know what your blueprint is and what you're doing for your nonprofit, like understanding your brand, your positioning, all of those things. But how would you go about like building that blueprint out so people can figure out what they're trying to do if they don't really understand that just yet?
You mean like sort of like their core mission as a nonprofit or more in the digital marketing side?
Well, I've been poking around your site a little bit and you talk about blueprints and I kind of wanted to see exactly what that.
Yeah, totally. So we offer growth marketing blueprints. And I sort of answer your question. I sort of answer mine, I guess, a little bit too. But, essentially we're looking at it from a digital marketing perspective. So we're sort of assuming that your nonprofit has some sort of, I guess, product market fit, right? Like that there's some traction or need for what your nonprofit offers and that people want to come in, right? Because with growth marketing, it's really data driven. And with growth marketing, we want to create a system for you where if you invest a certain amount of money, you can expect an outcome where you're making more money than what you invested. And whether that's through paid search or paid social or blogging or email marketing, we want to help you map out and create a blueprint for that system that's sustainable as far as the growth of your organization. Now, it's really hard to do that unless you've nailed down your nonprofit's positioning and branding. I think about, marketing in general as sort of a spectrum between brand marketing and growth marketing. Brand marketing is really about what's your positioning, what is your look and feel, what's your voice, who are you? And growth marketing is really about how you're going to distribute your message, how are you going to grow, how are you going to acquire donors, how are you going to acquire new constituents. And really, in a lot of ways, brand marketing comes, it's sort of like horse before the cart sort of things. Like you to focus on growth marketing without solving your brand marketing first is putting the cart before the horse, right? You need to make sure that you have a strong brand and strong positioning before you start investing like crazy in your growth. But that being said, there is overlap and there's some interesting ways that you can test your brand and your positioning with growth marketing tactics. There's a lot of, if you ever read the book, The Lean Startup, that book is, if you have it on your bookshelf here, they talk a lot about, So they talk a lot about hypothesis testing in that book, right? Like you have an idea of what people want, but you need to test that hypothesis. And digital marketing is a great way of doing that because with Facebook ads, for example, you can A/B test creative extremely easily, right? You can just create an ad campaign and say, I want to test this A value proposition versus B value proposition versus C value proposition and see which one does best. And I've worked with clients where like they haven't even launched their company yet, but they're running Facebook ads to figure out what's resonating most with people. Is it, is it the A value proposition or is it the B one? Do the ads work at all? Do people just totally ignore them? And so there is a way where you can use, these growth marketing tactics to help figure out and refine your branded positioning. So there is that really nice overlap where they can help each other out.
Yeah, you really have to understand who you are as a nonprofit, as an entity, as an organization, what you stand for, and then what you're trying to provide. And I know I've done a ton of episode with branding and marketers, and I keep kind of beating this up because people really need to understand who they are and what they stand for. Is your mission statement one or two sentences? Could you and everyone in your organization can then they repeat that without stumbling? Do they understand what an elevator pitch might look like and how that matters for what you're trying to do? And if you don't have that stuff figured out, you're not going to be able to put together a good branding and marketing campaign. People aren't going to be able to, you do your brand awareness and you have a little video out there, they'll watch the video and not know who you are. And you don't want that. You want them to know exactly who you are and what you stand for. When you have this video put together, you have a lead generation where you're collecting contacts and information that you can then use to do email marketing and other branding and ask campaigns and get volunteers, but not if you don't know who you are.
Yeah, totally. And I think, you know, knowing the sort of benchmarks you should be looking for is really helpful. Because like you said, if you can't get anyone to sign up to your email list and it costs you $10 to get an email instead of the benchmark of like, say, $150, something's off. Something about your positioning is off. Something about your targeting is off. You don't have that product market fit, that brand, that sort of positioning market fit that a nonprofit really needs before they go down this rabbit hole of growth marketing.
So you mentioned earlier in the interview about the playbook where you're asking this one question about different tactics they use. What are some of your favorite examples of tactics? I know you ask one question, you've got 15 different answers. Do you have things on like drop shipping, TikTok, other things like that?
Yeah. So those are two, you nailed it from our prep, but yeah, absolutely. We publish 15 interviews. We have a bunch more coming in the pipeline. One of my favorites, you know, that I've heard so far is there's a company, I forgot what it's called, and this company's probably gonna kill me for not mentioning it, but you know, if anyone who's worked in e-commerce knows that there's a tactic called drop shipping, right? Where essentially you can set up a Shopify store and sell products without ever touching the inventory. So you create a store, you design a product, people buy it from your website, and then someone, a drop shipper, will send that product to the customer without you ever having to touch it. Obviously, you know, they take a piece of the pie because they pay to make and distribute the product. But if you can figure out how to make it profitable, it's great. And I talked to a nonprofit marketer that essentially they launched a drop shipping store on their website. I think their nonprofit helps veterans get jobs. Great example, chatting with you. And they created a bunch of t-shirts dedicated to like hiring veterans, and they sell them on their website. And so it's really cool. And like, essentially they've been using it as a fundraising tactic and are basically selling these t-shirts. And I think the t-shirts are now like 20% of their revenue since they launched like a few months ago. So like a sizable portion of their online fundraising is now coming from selling merch on their website that they don't touch, is a drop ship straight to people that buy it. The other one that I get asked about a lot and that I've had one or two interviews about is TikTok, just because it's become such a popular social media platform. And I think, you know, whereas there's a lot of Gen X and baby boomers on Facebook and they have, you know, demographically, they have a lot more money than millennials and Gen Z. You know, not for nonprofits, Facebook is great because you reach a sort of a older audience with money. I think a lot of forward-thinking nonprofits are thinking about how they can nurture a relationship with younger people that aren't on Facebook anymore. And so I've chatted with some nonprofit marketers where I've seen great examples of producing short-form video for TikTok that has gotten millions of views, just, you know, sort of playing into the algorithm, being really creative. I've also seen situations where, you know, especially with nonprofit marketers that are focused on policy and that sort of legislative reform, they've been able to get, you know, TikTokers with a sizable audience, actually not even sizable, I'll say, I'll get, you know, TikTokers with say like 3,000 or 4,000 followers to share a link to one of their petition pages. And I know that one TikToker got like, just one TikToker with like 3,000 followers shared a link for this nonprofit in her TikTok bio, and it got like 10,000 email signups. Like just crazy engagement on that platform. So I think for forward-thinking nonprofits, it's a really interesting platform to think about nurturing sort of the next generation of supporters.
Yeah, one of the big things that people like Grant Cardone talks about, like, who's got my money? You got my money? And I know that's kind of a crass way to talk about nonprofit donors, but it is true. You have this group of people that support you, and they are a certain age, whatever category they might be in, Gen Z, Millennial, Gen X, or the Boomers. And you have to figure out if your nonprofit is going to stay for a lifetime, where you might find those new people. And you have to go to where they are. If you are looking for new professionals, like if you're looking for board members, you're going to go to LinkedIn where professionals live and you're going to find them there. If you're looking for people that love to be in a community and share things, well, you're going to find them on Facebook. If you're looking for people that maybe a little smart aleck and they want to just send a zinger, you might find those guys on Twitter. And if you're going to find the next generations of up-and-coming millennials and Gen Zers, you're going to find them on Snapchat. You're going to find them on TikTok. You're going to find them in other places. If you're looking for conservatives, the great thing right now is Parler, where it seems that the conservatives seem to be moving over to Parler, if that's who you're looking for. So knowing where your audience lives and who you're trying to talk to or what audience you're trying to gain, you need to know where they hang out and who they are. I know in marketing, they talk about defining your avatar. Who is your ideal listener? Well, it turns out that the ideal listener, as far as I can tell, for the nonprofit architect is someone in their 20s or 30s who is a female who is leading or starting to lead a nonprofit. That's who all of my stuff goes out to. And I am very impressed with my audience, my listener base. They are some amazing, flat out amazing people, and the things that they're doing in the nonprofit world just blows me away each and every time they connect with me. So I absolutely love that. And I love what you're doing, Stephen. You're my second Stephen interview. I mentioned my first interview. It's worth knowing a good couple of Stephens. How did you really get started in the nonprofit space, and why did you come up with this Good Goes Further to help nonprofits?
Yeah, basically when I started doing digital marketing consulting on my own, when I left my last full-time job 4 years ago, nonprofit was my first client. You know, it wasn't something I expected. It just sort of fell in my lap. And I've done, you know, from there, I've just sort of, you know, parlayed that case study into work with other nonprofits, and then it sort of grows from there. And like I mentioned, you know, earlier in the interview, you know, going into COVID and, you know, I really felt like, a little bit jaded. I think a lot of people felt that way. Just a little bit, frustrated with how things are going generally, and just wanted to figure out a way to, you know, sort of double down on the space and do, you know, use more of my digital marketing powers for good. You know, I think there's also, you know, in my head, you know, I'm, you know, overnight 4 years ago, I became a salesperson for Google and Facebook. Like that, it really is, at the end of the day, I, in a lot of ways, am selling Facebook and Google ads and convincing people to spend a lot of money on these platforms. And I don't know where that's going to end up, you know, in the long run. You know, these platforms are pretty controversial at this point. There's a lot of problems with them. I think there's a lot of good things happening on them too. I think it's super complicated. And so I think in sort of the grand scheme of things, I think as much as, you know, we can sort of use these platforms for good things and not just, things like misinformation and hate speech and stuff like that, which, you know, are huge problems, then I want to sort of tilt the scale that way a little bit and help people use these platforms in good and productive ways. That's sort of like where Good Goes Further comes out of, you know, so, and that's what we're up to. So yeah, I think, you know, if anyone's interested, check out the website. We got the blog up there. We got the video series I was just chatting about. We got the free Facebook group. Just put in your email to sign up. We'll get you approved. And obviously, if you're interested in a workshop, reach out. We'd be happy to talk.
So what is your website? Where can people find you online?
Goodgoesfurther.com. We got the .com. Yep. Very lucky.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Stephen. It's been a blast having you on the show today. I know we just met for the first time today, but I feel like I've known you for a long time.
Thanks, Travis. I really had a great time getting to know you. And I hope your listeners get some value out of our chat.
How could they not?
Yeah.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.